Hi, friends. This is Brock Polk, and I want to thank you for downloading this sermon from Heritage Church of Christ in Fort Worth, Texas. Our mission is to lead others to a thriving relationship with Jesus. And if you're ready to take a next step in your faith journey after you listen to this message, you can contact us through our website at www.heritagechurchofchrist.org. God bless you, and I hope you enjoy the following message.
Well, I really am excited to be back with you this morning after having been out of town last week with our ministry staff. And if you didn't get a chance to be here last week and hear the message that our guest speaker, Corey Trevathan, shared with our church, you really ought to take the time to go back on our app or our website and listen to what he shared. He helped continue our series on margin, which is about making space, making room in your life for the things that are most important. And as we continue with this series, I'm hearing from more and more people in our church family that this is something that all of us know the struggle. You know, like we all understand how difficult it is to, you know, constantly be reevaluating the priorities. We know what it's like for the schedule to be so full that it's hard to make time for what we really believe is most important. The reason we're talking about this right now, the reason we're doing this series in this season, is because I don't know if you've noticed, but the month of May really seems to be like the craziest month in anybody's schedule, especially if you have any young people involved in your life whatsoever. If you've got kids or grandkids or nieces or nephews or just friends with kids, then May is nuts, right? Because I can't even really believe that we find a way to stop and say something about the moms in the middle of May, because the whole rest of the month is about the kids. We're doing the graduations all the way from preschool to graduate school, right? And we're doing the end of year programs, and we're doing the senior proms, and we're doing the choir concerts at the end of the year. I mean, May is just absolutely full of get-togethers. And in the midst of all these get-togethers, if you're anything like me, you are a part of like being in 1,000 pictures, right? Everybody's snapping pictures of something all over the place because you want to remember these moments. These are special events. And so everybody's taking pictures. But have you had the experience where you're in the middle of one of those, you know, critical, like valuable moments that you want to remember, and suddenly your picture taking comes to a halt because you see a message like this? Have you been there? It never happens at a convenient time, right? I mean, that never shows up when you're just, you know, trying to take a picture of a recipe at the house or something like that, you know? Like, that happens when something that's only going to happen once is happening. In fact, I'm pretty sure that if phones had unlimited storage, by now we would have video footage of Bigfoot and the Loch Ness Monster and all that stuff. But the people who, like, you know, wanted to take video of it, their phones were full. They just couldn't take any more pictures when they had the chance. And you can really miss out on some critical moments, some important shots, if your phone runs out of storage. And so you have to develop a plan. You have to figure out a system to be able to offload some pictures and videos from your phone from time to time so that you'll have room when the moment strikes. And that's just a digital example of one of the principles that we're talking about in the margin series. You see, the thing about living with no margin, the problem with living without margin, whether you're talking about your finances or your schedule or your energy, the thing about living with no margin is you are operating at your limit. Like, you are at the extreme of what you can handle. If your calendar is so full that you don't have time to help somebody when a need arises, you're living with no margin. And living with no margin means that when an opportunity shows up that you would love to take advantage of, or when a challenge comes over the horizon and you got to figure out how to deal with it, you can't do it without dropping the ball someplace else. That's what it feels like to live with no margin. Margin is what allows you to be prepared for what's coming up around the next bend, what's coming over the horizon. Maybe you've seen some of the pictures of this incredible place I discovered that's in South America, down in Bolivia. It's been called the world's most dangerous road. Maybe you've seen pictures of this. It's called the Yungas Road. It's a single lane road that's been carved into the side of a chain of mountains. The road is 35 miles long, and there's only one lane to it. Okay? It's dangerous. There is a rock face on your right side if you're going uphill. There is a 2,000 foot drop on your left side as you're going uphill. There are mudslides. There are rocks that are falling. There's dust. I mean, it is dangerous enough to make the drive in normal conditions. But that doesn't stop trucks, buses, cars, motorcycles, cyclists from going up and down this road every day. That part's dangerous enough, but as you can imagine, the real problem occurs when you meet somebody coming the other direction, right? Then you've got an issue because you don't have any margin. And in this scenario, whichever vehicles are coming downhill from up in the mountains have the responsibility to yield the right of way, and so they have to scoot over to the outside of the road, to the cliff side of the road. And as you can imagine, that is easier said than done. I mean, these are drivers that are operating with zero margin for error. And as a result, there are lots of accidents. There are lots of serious accidents. Lots of people get hurt on that road every year. Now, I know our frustration around here, but our frustration with I-35 and 820 is nothing like that, right? You know, I get it. You know, we got bad roads around here, whatever. But our margin problem is nothing like what they're experiencing there. Our problem doesn't stem from the dangerous roads we're having to drive. But today I want to talk about how living without margin in our relationships has the potential to hurt the people that we love the most. When we live without margin in our relationships, it keeps us from accomplishing what is most important in this life. And I want to talk about what we can do about it. You know, like I know, the times are changing. I think back to when I was a kid. I grew up in a refinery town down on the Texas Gulf Coast. My dad worked for a chemical plant. He was part of the maintenance division. And it was a good job. He had regular hours. He always got to be on day shift as long as I was growing up. And so we got to have dad home at normal times, and that was great. But once in a while, the schedulers at the plant would plan for an event they called a shutdown. And a shutdown is when they actually have to take one of the chemical producing units and turn it off, take it offline so that they can do extensive maintenance on the whole unit. Okay? The problem with that, of course, is if you turn it off, it's not producing any product. And if it's not producing any product, it's not making any money for the company. And so they want the shutdown to happen fast. And so when that happened, my dad's schedule would go from normal to chaos really quick. And I mean, my dad's entire division would have to go into intense operating mode. They'd work long hours. They would, you know, sometimes even they'd sleep at the plant and wake back up and go right back to work. The goal, of course, was to stay on schedule. Don't let the shutdown last any longer than they planned. Now, that time period was hard, but it was always temporary. I mean, families that were used to having that parent home more often than that, you know, it was difficult for those few weeks, but it was always temporary. And since it was temporary, it was just a phase, it was just a little while, it was manageable. It was a short burst of high stress, followed by long periods of regular, more relaxed pace of work. But nowadays, it doesn't seem like it works like that for most of us. I hear from a lot of people who wouldn't describe their work rhythm that way at all. Despite all of our technical advances, it seems that lots of workers are living with constant stress. And the stakes always feel high. And the job market is ultra competitive. And the pressure to perform is always intense. And it's not just in our careers. We are shouldering all sorts of responsibilities. And it wears us thin. I mean, we're taking care of extended families when they go through a rough patch. We're donating our time to worthy causes and organizations. We're trying to make a difference. And the thing is, you know this, there is no shortage of good things that you can use to invest your time in, right? I mean, there's no shortage of great opportunities, great causes that you can devote your energy to trying to make a difference. But what we're learning is that even a life that's filled with good endeavors needs margin. Even a life that's filled up with good, worthwhile stuff needs margin. You know, I mentioned earlier in the series a couple of weeks ago that this series is really designed for me to preach to myself. And the rest of you are just eavesdropping on my little conversation here that I'm having with me. Because I need to learn this as much as anybody. I mean, I am constantly trying to navigate and find the right balance between ministry opportunities. And I'm volunteering at my kids' school. And I'm coaching the Little League team and all of that stuff. And in the midst of all of that, I'm asking, am I devoting, saving enough of myself to invest in my family? Am I devoting enough of myself toward time with God? Because even a life that's filled with good endeavors still needs margin. And we saw this, that 2 weeks ago, Jesus demonstrated for us how to do that balance. We read 2 weeks ago about how Jesus would actually devote time to go be alone with God, even when the crowds were clamoring for his attention. I mean, people were begging for him to show up and show off because they really, really wanted to see and experience more miracles, more healings. And Jesus would take time to get away. He'd go be alone with God. And then there were other times when Jesus would, he would say no to the big crowds and he would go and spend time with a small group of people who were in his inner circle, his friends that were, these were like his family on earth. It was the closest he had during his ministry years. And he would go and spend time with them where he could have a big impact. Jesus was in the habit of saying no to good things so that he could say yes and give his best attention to the relationships that mattered most. He made sure that God and the people that were closest to him did not just get the leftovers in his schedule and the leftovers in his energy. And this is why I'm talking to me. Because I want to make sure, I want to imitate Jesus in that way. I want to make sure that the people with whom I can have the most impact, the relationships that make the biggest difference, I want to make sure that they get my best energy. And if we're going to imitate Jesus, we're going to have to give ourselves some permission to save our best energy for the people we can impact the most. Rather than immersing ourselves just in work or worry or hobbies, we've got to recover some emotional margin so that we can invest in family, invest in our relationship with God, invest in this circle around us. We got to maintain our emotional and focus our emotional attention on the relationships that matter most. And I think that the only way we're going to do that, the only way that we're going to be able to really get our priorities right, is if we decide we're going to trust God to take care of the stuff that we're saying no to. Does that make sense? Let me show you a little bit about what I'm talking about. This morning, I want to take you back to the Old Testament, which makes up the first two-thirds of your Bible. And I want to remind you about a song that was written in there. It's in a book that's called Psalms, and it's an ancient collection of poems that a bunch of God followers over the period of hundreds of years wrote down. Now, all of these Psalms, there's about 150 of them in the book, and they all contain different material, but they're all just in their own way a response to the goodness of God. And maybe the most recognizable psalm in the whole book is the one we're going to look at this morning. It's the 23rd Psalm. It's written by a guy named David. He was the second king of the nation of Israel, but there's a really good chance, even though this is like 2,500 years old, there's a really good chance that you've heard this psalm before. You may have heard it read at a funeral or recited in a speech or in a movie. President George W. Bush actually included this psalm in his address to the nation on September 11th. It's not a prayer asking God for something. This song is more like a declaration of what God has already done and what God continues to do. And it's only six short verses long. Listen to this psalm, Psalm 23. David says, "The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil, for you are with me." He kind of turns to God in the second person now. "For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me. In the presence of my enemies, you anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows." And then he wraps it up. He says, "Surely, surely your goodness and love will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." These are powerful words, and it's vivid imagery. They're describing this relationship that's built on trust. I mean, David is trying to write a song about a God who he has discovered to be absolutely trustworthy. And he's telling about his experience. He's like, "Here's what I've been through. Here's what I have seen God do, even in the difficult times." Now, interesting thing here, we don't know when David wrote this psalm. We don't know how old he was when he wrote this. And David's life was really kind of divided into four distinct phases that were totally different. And in each phase, he had a different experience and learned something else about God, but they're very different. When he was a kid, he functioned as a shepherd for his father. So his dad had sheep, and David would be out in the fields by himself protecting this flock of sheep, and he'd protect them from predators that would come in and all of that. But then later, probably in his teen years, he became a soldier. And there was a famous event where he had the chance to defeat a big, huge giant guy named Goliath. And that's an epic story for a different day. But David became a soldier. He was celebrated as a soldier for quite a while. But then later, that didn't last too much longer. And then he eventually became kind of a fugitive because the king at the time decided he didn't like David anymore. He wanted him done away with. And so David was running from the army of Israel for quite a while. But eventually God worked things out and David became the king. And as you can imagine, that role comes with its own set of troubles and responsibilities and difficulties. And so David spent this life in all of these phases learning to trust God in different situations. And he could have written this psalm in any one of those phases, but listen to the language he uses. "The Lord is my shepherd," he says. He knows about being a shepherd. He knows what that's like. He says, "The Lord is my shepherd, and I lack nothing." The boy shepherd refers to himself as the sheep, and now God is the shepherd that watches over him. But God's not just any shepherd. He's a caring, providing shepherd. And David says, "I'm not missing anything. I've got everything that I need." Now, if he wrote this in the king phase of his life, it kind of makes sense that he would say, "I've got everything that I need." But think about the other phases. For him to write this as a young boy when he's a shepherd for his father, for him to write this when he's a soldier living in danger under threat because of the armies that they're battling against, when he's a fugitive running away from the king of his own nation and his armies. I mean, it seems a little more impressive in those moments for him to say, "I'm not missing anything." But David, he's looking at the course of his life up to this point. He's looking back at his experience with God, and he has figured out something that I think all of us need to be able to figure out, that God has always provided. That when he has allowed God to lead his life, he hasn't missed out on anything. Now, if we just stopped right there, I mean, if we just read that one line from Psalm 23, that one claim about God, it would give us a lot to reflect on, right? Because the reality is that we all spend a lot of our mental and physical energy trying to secure the things we feel like we're lacking. I mean, that's just kind of a reality of our world. But David's learned something here. He's learned to recognize and trust that God will always be enough. And here's how he describes it. He said, God makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. We're still going with the sheep shepherd metaphor here. I don't think he's actually making him lay down in the grass. He says, he refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake, so that he gets the credit. And what David is saying here is, he's saying, God has given me the ability to be at peace. God has gifted me with the ability to trust his leadership, to trust his direction, so that I can be at peace. And this ends up being one of the hallmarks of David's life. I mean, David's a guy that even when things were threatening around him, even when things were chaotic around him, he was peaceful because he had learned from an early age how to trust God. And that trust in God started to change him from the inside out. And so he was an unpanicked shepherd. He was an unafraid soldier. He was a courageous king. It made him a brave leader, and that was contagious. His confidence in God spread to other people around him. And by the time he got to the end of his life, David was king from the time he was 30 until he was 70. And he got to the end of his life, and he looks back over the course of his life, and he could see that in the scariest moments, when he was a shepherd and the bear attacked, when he was a soldier and the giant attacked, when he was a fugitive and the king's army was pursuing him, as long as David trusted God, things turned out great. He's been in some tight spots. He's been in some challenging places, and he describes the situation this way. Verse 4, he says, even though I walk through the darkest valley. Some of you have been in the dark valley. Even though I walk in the darkest valley, he says, I will fear no evil because you're there with me, God. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And you know, I wonder, if you were to look back over the timeline of your life, if you were to think back over the things that you've done and the things that you've said and the places that you've been, where your life has taken you so far, isn't it pretty easy to look back and find some times when you feel like, man, God must have been taking care of me there? Because I really can't explain how I got through that otherwise. I really can't explain how I survived that. I really can't explain how I endured that time. I mean, when you think about the tight spots that you've been in, when you remember some of the reckless things that you've said and done, doesn't it seem like you've had some help along the way? And maybe it was before you knew anything about God. Maybe you can look back to a time in your life when you didn't know anything about God, and yet God continued to give blessing and to bring you along until the moment when you became aware of his presence. Or maybe you've got a story where you knew about God and then you walked away from that. And you said, I don't want to have anything to do with that. And there was a time in your life where you knew about God, but you didn't want to know God. And yet you look back on that time, and somehow you still received blessing during that time. Somehow you were still provided for. You still were taken care of even when you didn't deserve it and you didn't earn it. David's been in those spots. He's been in some of those predicaments that looked inescapable, the valley of the shadow of death. And every time he's come out on the other side and he's learned to trust God just a little bit more. In fact, he learned that trusting God was even possible when you're under attack. Look, listen to what he says, verse 5. He says, God, you prepare a table for me in the presence of my enemies. I mean, while people are right there, people who hate me, people who want to harm me, people who want to see me gone, he says, you're right there blessing me in the midst of that. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. See, from the time David was a boy, God was showing him, as long as you're with me, you don't have to be afraid. As long as you're with me, you don't have to be scared. He was David was trusting himself to God's care, and he discovered that not only is that safe, but it's a sure thing. And David wraps up the song with this summary, the essence of what he's learned in all of his experiences with God. He says, surely goodness and love are going to follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. See, David's been looking at God's track record. David's been looking back at God's proven record, and he can see that God can be trusted. It's kind of like that relationship that most of us have with our mothers. You know, this doesn't apply across the board, and that's a shame. But the reality is, most of us, the first voice we ever recognized was Mom. And for most of us, the first name we ever said was Mama. And for most of us, the first person that ever fed us and clothed us and kept us warm was Mom. And so it makes sense that when things went south, that when we skinned our knee, we ran to Mom. That when we got scared, we ran to Mom. That when we got embarrassed, we ran to Mom. The reason we did that is because Mom had a track record, right? I mean, Mom had already proven from the beginning that she was going to be there. If you were cold, if you were hungry, she was going to be there. She had developed a reputation. And I'm convinced God's trying to develop that same reputation with you. God wants so badly for you to recognize that He has always cared, that He has always wanted your devotion, your trust, a connection with you. And I'm convinced that if we're going to add space in our lives, if we're going to say no to some good things so that we can say yes to the most important things, the way we're going to do that is by trusting God to take care of the stuff that we are saying no about. The way it's going to happen is we're going to say, okay, God, I've been trying to accomplish so much on my own. I've been working as hard as I could. I have been filling up my schedule trying to make a difference. I've been trying, but I'm wearing myself out. And so I'm going to trust you to take care of the things that I can't take care of. And based on your track record, God, I believe that you can be trusted. Based on the experience that I've had, based on the experience that David had, based on the experience of all of the other followers of God that I have ever met, I'm going to trust that your track record proves you can handle the margin in my life. The most effective way to create margin in your life is going to be to trust that God's going to be there to take care of the blank space. That God's going to be there to take care of the things that you laid down for His sake. If we're going to create margin in our life, it's going to happen because we decided to take God at His word to be somebody who cares for us. And I want you to remember this: when you're in the highest moments and when you're in the lowest moments of your life. There's a song that's popular on the radio right now, and I want to kind of stick it into your head in the hopes that you'll hear it. In fact, after this service is over, you can go and you can talk, but we're going to play the music video up here so that you can be familiar with the song. But I want you to plant this message in your head, because this is what this is all about. The chorus of this song, the song is called Hills and Valleys, and the chorus of the song says, on the mountains, when I'm at the highest point, like when life is going really well, on the mountains, I will bow my life to the one who set me there. It's saying when I'm at a great spot in my life, I will recognize that God has made this possible. But then the very next line says, but in the valley, I will lift my eyes to the one who sees me there. Which means that when things are not going well, when I feel like I'm under attack, when I feel like I'm stressed, I will look to God to be present and provisional with me. It says, when I'm standing on the mountain, I didn't get there on my own. I didn't get to this great spot. I didn't create all these blessings myself. And when I'm walking through the valley, I know I'm not alone. You're the God of hills and valleys. You're the God of hills and valleys, and I'm not alone. This is what David experienced with God. I've been on top of the mountain, and I've been down in the valley. I've been the king, and I've been the fugitive, David would say. But everywhere I went, I learned that I could trust God if I would just obey his direction. This is the invitation for us, that we would be people who trust God on the mountaintop and in the valley bottom. And we want you to take a next step. In your faith walk with Jesus, we want to invite you to a new level of trust that maybe you haven't been brave enough to try before.